السلام عليك يا روح الله،
السلام عليك يا روح الله،
أيها العبد الصالح
المطيع لله ولرسوله ولأمير المؤمنين،
المطيع لله ولرسوله ولأمير المؤمنين،
أشهد أنك قد أقمت الصلاة وآتيت الزكاة وأمرت بالمعروف ونهيت عن المنكر وجاهدت في الله حق جهاد حتى أتاك اليقين، فرحمك الله حيا وميتا.
السلام عليك يا روح الله،
السلام عليك يا روح الله.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين.
In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate, salutations to the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad. Blessings of God upon him and his progeny and his pure household. It's another 14th of Khordad.
And
the general atmosphere in the country is filled with the commemoration of that great personality, the unique leader, that affectionate leader with his iron will, with his resolve filled with firmness, with his strong faith, and that sage of the age. Our country and our nation today, and also in the future, will safeguard his commemoration, and this is something required. What I'm going to say today to the nation is a topic about the most important initiative by the late Imam. He had many initiatives, but this is his most important initiative, and that is the Islamic Republic. That was an initiative by our Imam. That means popular religious rule that has become official under the title of the Islamic Republic, and it's the title of an establishment arising from the Imam's leadership and the Iranian nation. I start from this point that amongst various systems in the world, including revolutionary systems, and also the systems that have taken shape in the past one or two centuries, I cannot find any system that can be compared to our system from the perspective of the many predictions made about its collapse and decline. From the very first day that Islamic Republic was established, the ill wishers, the enemies, who could not tolerate this great phenomenon, both inside and outside the country. They said that the Islamic Republic within 2 months, within 6 months, or sometimes they said within a year. They said that this system cannot last. The decisiveness and the resolve of our great Imam, and also the victories attained by the great nation in the course of the 8-year war and many other events actually somehow put an end to such claims, and it almost came to, and such ballyhoos came to an end at the time of the passing away of the Imam. But after the Imam's passing away, the ill-wishers gained hope again, and they started making predictions, and they started to utter their wishes in the form of new predictions. An old and worn-out faction that makes a lot of claims in the year 1369 released a statement, and in that statement that party stated that the Islamic Republic is on the edge of a precipice. The Islamic Republic is on the edge of a precipice, and with a single movement, then that means that the Islamic Republic would collapse, and that was a statement made in 1369 Iranian calendar. Several years later, a group that regretfully also held the position, and they were also representatives of the parliament in certain time, they said in a letter that there is less time left, there is a minimum time left, and they said that the Islamic Republic has to collapse, and this was another group, and of course they had the tendencies similar to that party, they had inclination towards that party to some extent. And also there were parties and groups making such statements inside and outside the country under the auspices of the foreigners. There such statements were made in, by, for example, released by, disseminated by radio channels, and they actually wished for the collapse of the Islamic Republic, and they uttered their wishes in the form of news. And it was 1 or 2 years ago that was the last case that the expansionist Americans, they made a statement, and a senior American official said in a decisive manner that the Islamic Republic will not celebrate its 40th anniversary. So such predictions have been made, and I cannot compare this to any other system. You see, from the inception of that system till today, there has been so many predictions made about the collapse of this establishment, and you cannot find any establishment similar to ours. Those who made such predictions, they just took into consideration many systems that came out of revolutions, because many revolutions and movements in East Asia and Southeast Asia, or in West Asia, or in Africa, and even in Europe, the French Revolution, for example, after several years after the formation, they were eliminated, and they, in fact, had a glorious start, and they had a poisonous termination. So the French Revolution suffered from a dictatorial monarchic system, and that was Napoleon Bonaparte. And you see similar systems throughout the world, and this had happened in our Iran as well. The constitutional movement took shape with many decrees, and 15 years after the signing of the movement, after the constitutional order was signed, 15 years later, a person like Reza Khan came to power with his black dictatorial approach, and it was worse than the Qajari dictatorship.
And
in the year 29 and 30, the years of the national movement, there was a movement that took shape. People poured onto the streets, and the oil was nationalized, and they took it away from the hands of the Brits and from the hands of the British, and then there was the coup and it was a British coup, and Mohammad Reza actually started a dictatorial rule for a long time. So these events have unfolded in the world. So based on such events, they had made such predictions. But thank God, the revolution and Imam Khomeini's movement did not collapse, did not come to a halt. Furthermore, it became more powerful on a daily basis. It did not give in
and
promoted its independence and had many accomplishments. And this establishment has overcome many hurdles. The hurdles that were created by some for this establishment, including political, economic, and security hurdles. And we managed to overcome these impediments. Today, the Islamic Republic is more developed compared to its starting point. It's more advanced, and it has made progress with the grace of God. Now, the question is, what is the secret behind such progress and steadfastness? How come, despite all these cases of enmity, it did not experience the fate of other systems? What is the secret behind it? I'm telling you that the secret behind such pride and glory and the steadfastness of this establishment is two terms, Islamic and Republic. To have these two terms beside one another, and what takes shape by these two terms, such an existence must continue to exist, and that include, by Republic we mean the people, and by Islamic we mean Islam. That's a popular religious rule. That was the accomplishment made by our Imam. That is, he created this theory of the Islamic Republic, and it found its way into various political theories at that time, and included political theories from the East and the West, covering political matters and political mentalities. And this theory found its way, and in fact it was fully realized. It was not just creating a theory. In other words, it was realized, and that led to the formation of the Islamic Republic establishment. Imam, may God bless his soul, he was a great man from various perspectives. One of the perspectives was his religious knowledge, and that was the point of support for the realization of this theory. So he had a profound wisdom, and he had a profound knowledge of Islam. He knew Islam very well, and he knew that the Islamic rule, that's the major message conveyed, and he profoundly believed in the people. He had a strong faith in people's capabilities and people's resolve and their loyalty. And there are so many memories. And the year 1341, Imam spoke about the seminary, spoke about political issues, and he said that if we invite the people, that dates back to the year 1341, he said that if we invite the people, the deserts of Qom will be filled with the people. And no one thought about this. No one just at that time could not think about this. So he had a strong faith, and both aspects of this theory, I mean the Islamic Republic theory, the its republic nature and Islamic nature, both aspects emanated from Islam, and the Imam had a profound knowledge of Islam. He had an inclusive knowledge of Islam, and that created this theory in his mind. And there were people opposing him. This must also must be taken into consideration. There were, the both aspects, the Islamic nature, the republic nature, the popular nature of the ruling system. So both these aspects came across opposition from the very first day, and even today there are some opposing this that have some views, and I'm going to mention them. Regarding the Islamic rule and the ruling system in the country that has to be in line with Islamic values and criteria and Islamic teachings, there were many opposing this, and of course they were not the same. There was a group of secular, non-religious people who believed that religion does not have such a status, does not have this right to get into social matters or the country's politics or the country's management. They believe that religion has no such a status. If someone believes in religion, that includes the daily prayers and personal matters, and they did not believe in the rule by religion. And some of them even compared religion to opiates in a society, and they even considered religion as being detrimental, to the society. And there was a group who believed in religion, and in order to defend religion, they said that religion must not be contaminated with politics, and that religion must safeguard its sanctity and not get into the scene of politics, because it's a scene of controversies and skirmishes and disputes. So if you want to make a right judgment, they can be considered as secular religious people. Because they did not believe in the interference of religion in the people's lives. And there were also two other fronts, the liberal seculars. They believed in popular rule, but they said that popular rule has nothing to do with religion. And they said that these are the technocrats that must get into the scene of Republican rule. And they said that an Islamic republic is meaningless, so they opposed the republic aspect. And there was a group who believed in religion, and they said that the religious rule has nothing to do with the people, and the people do not have any role here, and religion must rule the society. And there was also a group of such people. And these days we see the extremist aspect of this viewpoint amongst the elements of Daesh. They believed in the rule by religion, and they paid no attention to the people. Imam, by his trust in God and his faith in the people, and by referring to his profound knowledge of religion, he stood firmly and proceeded with this theory, and this was a major breakthrough, and it was a source of creativity in the social environments. That's a scholarly understanding and perception. I have to shortly mention this. This is not something emotional. This is a scholarly perception that the religion must rule the society, and the people must also be present here. That means popular religious rule. This emanates from the spirit of Islam. That's the rule by religion and the noble Quran. And if anyone denies this, this indicates that he has not properly understood the noble Quran. The Imam says, that's chapter Nisa. The Imam refers to chapter Nisa of the noble Quran. The prophets were sent so that the people would obey them. Obey what? What is the subject of obedience? There are hundreds of Quranic verses, verses referring to jihad, and also verses referring to the administration of justice, and also verses referring to punishments, and also contracts and transactions, verses referring to international contracts. So these verses indicate a rule. So in such cases, one should obey the prophet. In the case of defending the country, in the case of social contracts, and also in signing contracts and agreements with other countries, and the administration of justice, and the spread of spreading justice into society. These are the points that one should obey the prophet. This is the meaning of the ruling system in the society. And of course, there are narrations from the prophet and also reference being made to the tradition of the prophet. And the prophet of Islam, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, at a time when the representatives of the people of Yathrib came to Mecca in order to invite the prophet to Yathrib, that later became Madinat al-Nabi, when they spoke with the prophet in Mena, that was what the prophet said. He said that I will come, but you should support and you should defend, and they accepted and vowed to do so. And when the prophet entered Medina, he established the Islamic rule and created that sovereignty, and that was related to his prophethood. It was not anything else, because the people had faith in the prophet, and the prophet established the Islamic rule. After the passing away of the prophet, despite the differences about his, you know, there were differences about his successor, but speaking of those who had disputes about the successor, but none of them had any doubts that any ruling system that takes shape is based on religion. It has to be based on religion and the noble Quran. Therefore, the issue of Islamic rule and religious rule, it's something quite clear, and it's a prerequisite for believing in Islam. If someone believes in Islam, then he should also believe in the rule of Islam in the society. If he is careful about the Islamic precepts. Now, speaking of the issue of the republic nature and the popular rule and the importance of the public vote, and this must be considered from two perspectives. One perspective is the religious aspect of the issue, and that is the issue of responsibility and right. The other aspect is the practical possibility of the realization of a religious rule that cannot be attained without people's participation. Now, speaking of the public participation, and that is a definite participation in the Islamic rule, the ruling system, and this will be understood from every person's responsibility. In the Holy Quran, and also the religious narrations referring to people's responsibility concerning the fate of the society. People from different walks of life, they are accountable with respect to the condition of the society. The affairs of Muslims, that is the affairs of the Muslim society, includes all aspects. Or the Imam Ali in his Safin sermon that speaks a lot about the ruling system. Imam Ali, peace be upon him, has an expression in this sermon.
والتعاون على إقامة الحق بينهم. إن جزء مهمترين.
This is
لازمترين حقوق پروردگار بر مردم اینه.
One of the most important divine obligations. That means that the people must cooperate in order to administer justice and restore people's rights. In fact, the people are accountable. They should help in order to establish the divine rule in the society, to call on people to do good deeds. There should be a just ruling system in the society, and the people must call for this. This shows people's responsibility in this regard, or the necessity to counter social deviations. In the Sheikh Sharia sermon, Imam Ali has considered this as one of the reasons behind accepting the ruling system. And the ulemas have vowed, and I will explain about the ulemas and the scholars, that is to just not give in to social distinctions, to social rifts, to have a person who is so rich is dying of that richness, and a person who is hungry. So this is a rift. And the reason the ulemas have been addressed is that the ulema have a greater responsibility, or that's because the ulemas are the ones who are scholars and have this knowledge. So a person who is knowledgeable is held liable. So this is a general responsibility. How is this responsibility realized? Today it can be realized through elections. Someday in the future there may be other tools for realizing this responsibility. And also there's a right for determining one's fate. The individuals are free. And this has been mentioned by Imam Ali. You should not go after anyone. You have been created as a free individual, and you can determine your destiny. And this is a clear principle in Islam. So the issue of popular rule has been based on religious precepts, and there are verses from the Noble Quran, and also there are expressions and phrases from Nahjul Balagha, and also the traditions of the Prophet and the Imam of the Pious, Imam Ali. And this has been mentioned in the Safin sermon. Do not refrain. And tell me your views about my method of administering the affairs. Therefore, people's responsibility and rights emanate from the spirit of Islam. This is the first perspective. And the second perspective is related to the need for public support. And this is something quite clear. The administrations, not just religious ones, other administrations, if they are not supported by the people, they have to live with lashes and swords. In other words, an Islamic rule that does not believe in using swords or lashes or so on. And any administration cannot last. Any administration cannot last without public support. And without people's support, it was not able for the Islamic Republic to take shape or continue its life. And it has lasted, thank God, and it will continue to last. So the religious popular rule with the title of the Islamic Republic that became official and it was initiated by Imam Khomeini, that was a genuine religious plan. And there's no doubt about it. Some have said that Imam had just got this from the Westerners, people's public vote and so on. What we have understood from Imam, and he acted in a firm manner, and if there was no popular, and if popular rule was not emanated from religion, then it would not have been fulfilled by Imam. When Imam raised the issue of the Islamic dress code, the obligation for women to observe the Islamic dress code, many opposed this, and even there were persons close to Imam, and he came to me and said that, What is this? What is the Imam saying? And tell the Imam to refrain from this. And of course, I had shared the same view with Imam. And many opposed this, but Imam had this decisive view, and he raised the issue of the Islamic dress code, and that was the correct viewpoint. So this was an advanced school, and this astonishing and beautiful perception of Islam that was based on his profound wisdom. This was presented by Imam, and by presenting this logical plan and firm plan, he managed to just raise this topic, even though the Iranians had suffered from dictatorship in the past, and in fact he made the Iranian people believe in their capabilities. The dear young people who have not seen the time prior to the revolution, it's very difficult for you to realize we have lived at that time, and we had breathed in that atmosphere, and the people had no option. And if someone told the people that you can interfere in the affairs of the country, this was not believable for the masses. And the people had a marginal role, and they couldn't do anything, particularly during the black dictatorship of Pahlavi regime. And we had lived during the 20 or 30 years of time in that regime, and the people had lived with dictatorship, and there was a major breakthrough by Imam, and he brought the people to the scene, and the young people had faith in their capabilities, and the huge capacity of the people and their will was actually activated by Imam, and through his leadership and guidance, he managed to realize those capacities, leading to major accomplishments. And the several thousand monarchic rule was actually collapsed, and the people came to the scene, and the people played a focal role, and the people managed to resist and become stronger on a daily basis. And the Islamic Republic was a sapling, and today this has turned into a strong tree and a deep-rooted tree that cannot be eliminated with the strongest storms. major events, the people actually and the nation managed to protect itself in the case of major events. 8 years, I can refer to 8 years of war. For 8 years, all major powers of the world supported a government to attack us and provided that government with intelligence, equipment, tactics, and financially supported that government in order to destroy the Islamic Republic. But the nation stood firmly and brought them to their knees and did not actually give in and managed to promote its dignity. So these two terms, Islamic and Republic, Imam considered these two terms as a solution for all the problems of the country and to observe Islamic teachings and also have public participation. That was his view, and he said not to add a single word or not to delete a single word. That means Islamic without Republic or Republic without Islamic. This has no meaning. What Imam emphasized was the Islamic Republic. That means the rule of Islam and the rule of the people. So they are they have to be combined together, and the values must be delineated by Islam, and the public rule means that the form of administering the affairs will be determined by the people, so the people's will is effective, and the Islamic precepts are effective. So this was considered as the solution by Imam, and this is the fact of the matter, that this is the solution for all the problems of the country. When we got help from the people and observed Islam, we made progress. That includes at the time of the Imam and also after him. I'm firmly stating this, and there are so many pieces of evidence that can be presented to the people. When we had people's participation, and when we considered Islam as the main benchmark for our activities, we made progress. And when there was any shortcoming in one of these aspects, then we failed to make progress. For example, with respect to economic issues, if we have people's participation, I've been repeating this in the past years, that the small and average-sized workshops, industrial workshops, must be developed. These small and average-sized workshops will provide the livelihood of millions of people. So this means people's participation. If we had reinforced them, then we had improved the economic situation, and that includes other aspects as well. If we speaking of the distinguished officials of the country, if they take into account the Islamic dimensions and observe the Islamic teachings, including internal or external matters, including economic, cultural, political, and other matters, and at the same time have people's role and create the necessary mechanisms in order to also have people's participation, then all the problems will be resolved. The statements by the Imam are also of paramount importance. I'm going to mention some of them. Regarding Islam and regarding popular rule, Imam has made clear and firm statements. Regarding Islam, Imam rejects a reactionary Islam and also the eclecticals, those who actually seek to inculcate other statements into the public in the name of Islam. From the view of Imam, Islam seeks justice, opposes corruption and hegemony and arrogance. And these have been mentioned in his will, and there are more than 20 volumes of the statements by Imam, and we have heard all these directly from the Imam. But those who have not seen the Imam, they can refer to these expressions by the Imam, and it's quite clear. And Islam that Imam believes in opposes hegemony, opposes America, opposes foreign interference, and opposes just kneeling down before the enemy. And Islam that counters corruption, and Islam that Imam believes in. It's an Islam that opposes corruption and opposes any misuse of the public treasury. So this is an Islam that opposes corruption, and Islamic government is the one that opposes corruption. It opposes reactionary thoughts. It opposes backwardness, a backwarded way of thinking.
میدان زندگی کردن از فکر نو اسلامی و فکر نو امام بزرگوار فاصله گرفتن اسلام ضد اشرافیگری است اسلام طرفدار محرومانه
and اسلام supports the underprivileged and اسلام opposes social rifts from the economic aspect and in one of his letters to one of the officials and this is related to the few months before his passing away he writes that you should show that the people have held an uprising against backwardness, reactionary way of thinking, and they have replaced monarchic, eclectical, and replaced the American Islam with a genuine Mohammedan Islam. This is related to the month of Day 1367. It's not related to the passionate days of the start of the revolution. And this was a letter written by Imam a few months prior to his passing away. So that's Imam's view about Islam. Regarding popular rule, and he considered the elections as a manifestation of popular rule, and today people's participation takes place through elections. Perhaps in the future, the elections may become meaningless and there may other forms taking shape with respect to people's participation. Today, it's the elections, and it was elections at the time of the Imam. And he has made important statements about the elections. He considers elections as a religious obligation. In his will, there is a statement making a warning. Failure to participate in elections in certain junctures may be considered as a sin, can be considered as a major sin. That's Imam's view about elections. Or he states that failure to participate in the elections can bring about consequences, worldly consequences, that may affect the later generations, and this may lead to the person being questioned by God. So these are the statements by Imam, and through his firm approach, he managed to strengthen the Islamic Republic. And after his passing away, the nation safeguarded this divine gift that was the popular religious rule that was granted by Imam, and the Iranian nation safeguarded this gift in the face of the conspiracies by the enemies of Iran and Iranians, and the enemies have made various efforts, and they hatched various plots in order to separate the people from this establishment and also tarnish people's belief in the popular religious rule and Islam. The nation managed to foil all these plots, and they stood firmly. And every time the enemies faced a strong fortification of the Iranian nation, and today the enemies have laid an ambush, and they want to create a rift between the people and the establishment, but they have come across the firm resolve of the Iranian nation. They have hatched security conspiracies, political conspiracies, and they have launched economic plots, and they tried to launch an intellectual onslaught, but they have all failed. Unfortunately, there were and are certain individuals who somehow repeat what the enemies say. There are certain interpretations calling for elimination of ideologies. That means to set aside the Islamic approach regarding the popular religious rule and go after the corrupt liberal democracy, deviated liberal democracy approaches that has made the world people miserable today. And there are some who seek to just call for religion to just distance itself from the society in order to protect its sanctity. So these are the statements and views expressed prior to the revolution. So, in order to observe religious precepts, it cannot be combined with popular rule. This is also what is said by the enemies of the Islamic Republic and the Iranian nation. And of course, some may say they make these statements due to negligence. I'm not accusing anyone. I'm not accusing anyone to say that whoever says this have been backed by the enemies. But I'm informing you that this is what is said by the enemy, and the enemy is after eradicating Islam. In fact, the enemies do not care about popular rule, and they are after uprooting Islam. And that's a major mistake if we separate popular rule from the spirit of Islam. And the Constitution has clarified this. You see that in the Constitution, the political and religious figures have been considered as the chief executive, the head of the executive branch. This is the religious and political figures. This means that so that the person would be able to consider the interests in the political arena, and with respect to the religious arena, he should be able to guide the people and help the people. And in both cases, one should act in a based on wisdom. And the issue of trust and virtue that has been mentioned by the Constitution, this is also an important matter stipulated by the Constitution. So we are getting closer to the election day, and fortunately, in fact, the atmosphere is becoming more passionate and more glorious, and there are some who, on the pretext, futile pretext, they want to somehow overlooked the elections. This is acting in accordance with the wish of the enemies, and the enemies of popular rule. And of course, both aspects must be taken into account. That means popular rule and the Islamic aspect and age. And if one of these pillars are undermined, then that will be a blow to both Iran and Islam. A few words about the elections. It is said that some due to pressures caused by livelihoods that we all know and we feel this. Due to such pressures, there are some who are doubtful about participation in the elections, or some are saying that we voted in favor of an individual passionately and that led to becoming upset at the end of the term. So it's better not to participate in the election. So some of these statements are being made and views are being expressed, and these are not true. These things must not discourage us with regard to participation in the elections. If there is any shortcoming or if there's any inefficiency through correct selection, with a good selection, we must compensate for such shortcomings. If there's any weakness in management, what is the solution? Is it not to interfere, or is the solution can one find a solution by interfering in the affairs and in this way create a popular and Islamic management? That's the solution. And this must be compensated in this way rather than not participating in the elections. Of course, one should be careful in making a choice, and one should not just trust the promises. We say the same things about foreigners regarding the nuclear issue that is ongoing. I always say the officials that one should not trust promises. What matters are the deeds, not the words. And one cannot just trust the words. And it's true about important issues in the country. It's easy to just make utterances. What matters is that if a person is making a promise, you should look for that person's background to see whether he has taken any practical action. So you cannot only consider one's efficiency based on his words. Regarding the candidates, I ask the candidates not to give promises that, in case that they are not certain about their the possibility to put them into practice. This is to the detriment of the country. Why? Because you give a promise and then when you become the president and you do not fulfill your promise, then this will disappoint the people, and the people will become disappointed towards the elections and the establishment. Therefore, if the candidates, the hopefuls, are not certain about those promises, it's not authorized to give such promises. If it's quite clear that, and if the experts confirm that the promises can be fulfilled, then you can give such promises to the people. But to just give promises without the possibility to realize them, that will disappoint the people, and that's a sin. I also have an expectation from the hopefuls. You should chant slogans and mottos that you believe in. Some give mottos and chant slogans, and we know these individuals, and we know that they may not fully believe in what they say. One should be honest with the people. And if you chant a slogan that you do not believe in, you should not chant such a motto. A few weeks ago, I spoke with the MPs, and I said that those who are influential amongst the people, they should encourage the people to take part in the elections. In addition to this, I want to say this is not limited to influential figures. All individuals in the society must feel obligated to take part in the elections and also call on others to participate in the elections. And this means recommending others to righteousness. This has been mentioned by the Holy Quran, and this is a recommendation to righteousness. It's an obligation, and members of a family, the colleagues and relatives and people from all walks of life must be invited to take part in the elections. And also, another expectation from the hopefuls is that the hopefuls must decide that in case of becoming the president, they should feel committed to social justice, reducing the rift between the poor and the rich, and they should feel committed to realizing this goal, and also countering corruption in a decisive manner without any consideration, to act to counter corruption in a firm manner, and also feel committed to strengthen domestic production. I've said this on several occasions. This is also has been said by economic experts, and I've emphasized this on several occasions, that domestic production must be reinforced and supported through combating smuggling and those who fill their pockets by imports and do not want imports to be stopped, and those who have harm domestic production. It's important to counter such individuals, and this must be a major obligation. And the candidate must stipulate that he's committed to these objectives. And if he's elected and he has, in case of not fulfilling his responsibility, the supervisory bodies must question that person. In conclusion, I want to make a necessary recommendation. It's a humanitarian and religious matter. In case of disqualification, and it was, and some of those who were disqualified, they were somehow oppressed. That means there was some. Their families, their esteemed families, came across such attributes, and there were wrong reports, and it was proven that they were wrong, and it was spread amongst the people, and the loose, that one of the reasons I call this cyberspace as being loose is that there are no, you see that in this loose space, such attributes and rumors were actually spread, and to safeguard one's status is a major issue. I call on the relevant organs and bodies to compensate for this. There were cases that were wrong reports related to one's child or family, and it was later clarified that they were wrong and one's prestige must be restored. May God protect us in the face of sin and tyranny and tarnishing. May God protect us in tarnishing the prestige of a Muslim. May God, through His grace, bless this soul of our great Imam. And make him becoming satisfied of our performance, and make God protect us, and also make this elections as a source of crushing the enemy, and with the grace of God this will happen.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
There you have it. That was leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, delivering a televised speech on the occasion of the 32nd anniversary of the passing away of the founder of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini. He basically spoke about a number of issues that had to do with both Iran in terms of its international standing, as well as its upcoming elections, which is, by the way, in 2 weeks' time. He rejected the prediction of enemies regarding the collapse of the Islamic Republic, which according to them could begin and happen since its very first day. The leader said that some started hostilities against the revolution since its outset, and that Islamic Republic has faced opposition from different camps again from its beginning. The leader said the late Imam had great trust in people's capabilities and judgment. He said certain groups, including liberals, are against the role of religion in public spheres. He said that Muslims have a religious duty on deciding the condition of their society. They shouldn't remain indifferent. He said no administration can last without public support. And that the late Imam encouraged Iranians to have faith in their own capabilities, and that he was against all forms of hegemony and corruption. He said that the enemies have been seeking to create rifts between people and the Islamic establishment. Regarding the Iranian upcoming election in 2 weeks' time, he said that shortcomings should not discourage people from casting vote in elections, and that presidential hopefuls should not disappoint people with hollow promises, and that influential figures should encourage people to take part in elections. We're trying to give you a better understanding into what the leader just said on the 32nd anniversary of the late Iranian founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini's passing anniversary, with the help of my own old professor, Professor Mohammad Marandi with Tehran University, who will enlighten us with his comments regarding what we just heard the leader of the Islamic Revolution said on that anniversary. Professor, it's good to see you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Matt.
Professor, please begin with how is it, you know, before I go and speak to you about the legacy of the Imam as outlined, you know, in some detail by the leader. You know, the fact that it's almost one-third of a century is passing from the passing away of the late founder, and still it is one of the milestones, you know, in the history of the Islamic Revolution. How do you describe that for us?
Let's look at the map today of this whole region. The United States, Soviet Union, which once upon a time ruled the world between themselves, And of course, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, we had U.S. complete domination, literally, over most of the world. Now we see that the United States is losing one foothold after another. It has failed in Afghanistan, it has failed in Iraq, it has failed in its dirty war in Syria, in Lebanon, in Gaza of all places, in Yemen. And we see how the footholds of the Western Empire in this region, the Israeli apartheid regime in particular, how their foundations are weakening and how the foundations of pro-American dictatorships in the region are weakening. These are all the result of a movement that the late Imam Khomeini initiated. And the revolution, despite all the problems, it's no utopia. The Islamic Republic of Iran has many problems. But despite all the sanctions, wars, propaganda, the amount of Persian language propaganda that is being beamed into the country, whether through television or online or through other means, is unprecedented in the world. There's no country in the world that has so many hostile media outlets directed against it by foreign powers. So despite all this, we see that that a sanctioned country, a country that has been prevented from even purchasing masks, face masks, we remember a year ago, ventilators and vaccines, and the materials to develop vaccines, the vaccines that we see that are being developed today in Iran were delayed for months because the Americans were trying to block Iran from bringing in the material needed. But despite all this, we still see that Iran remains steadfast, but also, perhaps more importantly, we see that this wave of resistance has gone far beyond Iran's borders. And in my opinion, it's on the verge of taking down this empire in this part of the world, which in my opinion will result in a much better situation for the indigenous population. But I would also like to add one other thing, and that is that the revolution itself, one of the unique aspects of this revolution is that it was indigenous. It was based upon indigenous values. It was not through some imported European ideology, whether Marxism or liberalism or fascism or nationalism. It was based on indigenous ideas and values, and not a rejection of anything positive that has been a contribution to humanity in other parts of the world. But I think that not only did he lead the country towards decolonization, but he also helped Iranians to a degree decolonize their minds, to believe that their values, their worldview is just as legitimate and just as valuable as anything that is produced in the West. Of course, this is not something universal in Iran, but I think that he has made great progress in this regard, and this is something, again, that goes beyond Iran's borders.
Sure. Professor, back again to the issue of our own country, the leader said that there have been certain groups who have opposed the Islamic establishment of Iran since its first day. He also said that famously they've been saying that the collapse of the system will arrive any day, and that has happened again since its outset. If you were to explain this for us, what are the anchors, what are the hooks that have actually kept the establishment in its place, despite, as the leader said, all these drives?
First of all, one of the very painful things that I think exists is when a segment of the population or intellectuals in a population, in a country, choose to side with the empire over their own people. Mm. When the United States, when any foreign country antagonizes a nation, sanctions a nation, imposes a war on a nation, and then you see that the certain intellectuals or certain public figures inside the country are saying the same thing as the empire, they're mimicking the mouthpieces of empire. attacking their own country with all its flaws, with all its shortcomings. But that, I think, is one of the most painful yet ugly aspects of intellectual life in the global south. This is not simply a problem in Iran. When in Venezuela, certain people side with Americans who sanction the people who steal the assets of the country and the Europeans, the European Union and Britain, they steal the assets of the country, yet certain intellectuals side with this empire that has imposed itself on Venezuela or on Iran and other countries for hundreds of years. That's what the Europeans have done. What we see today in Palestine is what the state of affairs was openly for hundreds of years across the world. But when you see intellectual figures siding with the empire, with a very evil empire, that I think is something that is that no one can really defend. So these people who have constantly sided with the narratives of Western countries that have done nothing but harm to us, nothing but harm. I personally survived two chemical attacks. These were not produced by Saddam Hussein. These were given to Saddam. The capability was given to Saddam Hussein by these so-called civilized governments. They were, the military intelligence was given to Saddam Hussein by the so-called civilized United States. And the political cover was given to Saddam Hussein by these civilized, so-called civilized regimes. So when such people side with the empire, I think that it's obvious that they are on the not only on the wrong side of history, but they're taking a highly immoral stance. But what has preserved the Islamic Republic of Iran, I think, is partially the fact that it adheres to indigenous values, the values that are a part of that society. It's not a rejection of other values. It doesn't mean that if you have your, you believe in your own religion and culture, that you reject anything that comes from abroad. But it does mean that you have a certain self-confidence in your own people, in your own capabilities, in your own intellectual capabilities. And on the other hand, I think it's also based upon the fact that the Islamic Republic of Iran has always had a strong element of democracy within the framework of the Constitution. Now, is it ideal? Of course not. But when you have foreign powers that are constantly trying to undermine you, that are constantly trying to manipulate the electorate, both through sanctions and through their media, misinformation, war, violence, terrorism, and regional extremism that they've spread across the region, then it is obvious that that state is not going to be able to conduct itself under completely normal circumstances. Yet despite this immense hostility and antagonism, we still see that there's always been a strong degree of democracy in this country. Remember, in the United States, when they made accusations against Russia to bring in Trump, which, in my opinion, are unfounded, and there's no real evidence that foreign powers or foreign countries have had the ability to change the electoral results in the United States. But we saw 4 years of crisis in the United States based on this whole Russiagate accusation, which, as I said, there's no evidence, there's no proof, it's just a narrative. Sure. Yet Iran, which is a small, much smaller country than the United States, and it is constantly being attacked by the United States and its European allies and terrorists, which they support, and the sanctions which they've imposed, and the extremism that they've spread across the region, like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. When you look at the broader picture, you see that the Islamic Republic of Iran, despite all these difficulties, it is still able to maintain a strong element of democracy. Although, as I said, it's no utopia, but I think it's commendable. Because other countries that would be facing similar circumstances would either have fallen already, or they would have shut down debate within the country altogether to keep out the capabilities of the empire from undermining the country. But the Islamic Republic of Iran has been able to maintain this element within the framework of the Constitution and the the running of the country.
Professor, one last question, and perhaps more importantly, we're approaching the election days in Iran. The leader also spoke about, it's very interesting, on the anniversary of the passing of the leader, of the founder, he also gave a special segment of his speech to the issue of elections. You know, I don't need to remind you, Professor, but for the people, the viewers, non-Iranians, that, you know, Imam Khomeini once famously said that the touchstone of whatever we do in this country, the touchstone, the criteria, is the vote of the people. The Islamic establishment in Iran in itself has actually come to power since its day one with 98% popular vote. The fact that Imam Khomeini has spoken about this right now in his speech, the leader spoke about this, and we're also only 2 weeks away from that. How will that set the scene?
Yes, that's an important point. Within the framework of the Constitution, there are candidates that are standing for election. And the more people participate in the election, the more the pillars of public participation and democracy are strengthened. And again, I'm not saying that the Islamic Republic of Iran its system is foolproof. In fact, Ayatollah Khamenei today alluded to my understanding, the candidacy of Dr. Larijani, the former Speaker of Parliament. And from my understanding of what he was saying was that there were accusations about his child having, one of his children having foreign nationality, which turned out to be untrue. And he was stressing the point that this was an injustice was done, especially since online many ordinary people or many influential people repeated those accusations. And so first, I think one of the important things is that we as individuals have to be respectful about speaking of others, whether they're public figures or private figures, without having evidence. And B, it does show that the system is not foolproof, and that the system has flaws, and that decisions may be made based on flawed intelligence or manipulated intelligence. But the very fact that the truth does come out, and the fact that the Ayatollah Khamenei comes on television, says this, shows that the system has these checks and balances. And of course, this is not something that will ever be acknowledged in the West, in Western countries. So my advice ultimately is that we should all vote, because, first of all, it helps shape the future direction of the country, because obviously the different candidates have different characteristics. But in addition to that, the very fact that the Americans and the Europeans, who have done nothing but harm to our people, don't want us to vote, and the fact that they constantly try to, through their Persian media and their online warfare, try to create a sense of depression and hopelessness among Iranians, and they've been doing this for years, alongside the sanctions and alongside the weaponization of coronavirus. Since they're so much opposed to voting, I would definitely vote.
Thank you very, very much. That's Professor Mohammad Marandi with Tehran University. It's as always, I don't need to remind you, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, Professor, with us. Thank you very much, viewers, for being with us for that live coverage. We'll be back with you with the world's full news in about 11 minutes' time. Stay tuned.